I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away.
Chicago's R. Kelly, celebrated as one of the greatest R&B singers of all time by some, but his playboy lifestyle has been riddled with rumors of abuse, predatory sexual behavior, and underage sex. In 2008, he was acquitted of 14 charges of child pornography in a Chicago courtroom at 26 in California. And as I said before, Surviving R. Kelly is a Lifetime Network documentary that I binge-watched. It was just fascinating to watch. It was very interesting. It was a learning experience. It was hard to watch, but I thought it was important enough to contact the psychologist who was prominently interviewed, Dr. Jodi Adewale, who is a licensed psychologist who joins me today on WGN. Hi, doctor.
Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for having me.
Well,
honored.
Thank you so much for joining me. And I have to say, you did a really good job on this documentary. I know a lot of people who are trained as you are have a hard time explaining things without using big words. And you really kind of use very common words and common explanations that make a lot of sense. And I think you did a very good job on it. So congratulations
on
that.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's been one of the struggles in the psychology field of bridging the textbook to the community. And I say a lot of people get put off because they don't understand the words that are coming out of a psychiatrist's mouth.
Exactly, and I feel the same way about lawyers. You know, people are put off when lawyers talk in statutes and in concepts that don't make sense. So I'm going to issue a little bit of a disclaimer here because, as you reminded me, there's a rule that says that psychologists can't talk about a particular person if they haven't already interviewed them and if they hadn't gotten consent. So we're going to be talking generally in this regard. We're not going to be talking about R. Kelly. We're going to be talking about people who may have some of the same characteristics that are portrayed in the documentary. And again, R. Kelly has not been convicted. That's prominently displayed in the documentary. He's not been charged right now, and he's not been convicted. So let's start with the background of a person who might be capable of pedophilia. What about a person's background would lead a person to have this kind of conduct?
Okay, so before I jump to that question, there's two types. There's a pedophile and a hebephile or hebephile. A pedophile is someone who's more attracted to kids who are 11 and younger, and a hebephile is attracted to kids who are between 11 and 14. So it depends. That's just a different clarification to note. Oftentimes, people are victimized as young children. And sometimes get stuck in stages of their sexual and social development, and they understand sex when they were introduced to it. So a person might be sexually abused at 12 and might get stuck in that stage. You don't have to be a victim of sexual trauma or sexual abuse to become a pedophile or hebephile. There might be there might be social factors, there might be biological factors, there might be psychological factors that contribute to your attraction to young boys or young girls. As we develop, there's all types of development that's going on: social, cognitive, emotional, psychological, sexual, moral. And if anything goes wrong in any of these stages of development, it can come out in many ways. So an individual who has been sexually abused sometimes perpetrates the trauma back to children to children where he or she was the same age, but there could be other factors involved, including a learned behavior.
And certainly not everyone who is sexually abused becomes a perpetrator, and I'd make that very clear.
Yes, very clear. So if you were sexually abused, there's a chance that you could perpetrate the violence. If you were sexually abused and you have support from the family, you have psychological support, you maybe are involved with the community, everyone in your environment is telling you this was wrong, you didn't deserve this, yes, you can recover from the trauma. But people who tend to get isolated and have to deal with the abuse on their own sometimes can come out where they re-perpetrate the violence or the sexual abuse to children or adults as they get older.
So that, I guess, that goes to the importance of when it's discovered and when there is a discovery of this kind of behavior when you're young, you know, to get help for these kids is crucial to kind of cut off the long-term effects that might happen because of it.
Yes, agree. 100% agree. The earlier you can deal with the trauma, the better.
Now, there's an allegation, it's not quite fleshed out in the documentary, but the brother, R. Kelly's brother, said that he was also sexually abused, and I believe he has said outside the documentary that it might have been a sister. And we don't know if that's the case or not, and we're not going to make a claim one way or the other. But this is fairly unusual in that a female family member would sexually abuse a male. Is there some difference between a boy sexually abusing a girl and a girl sexually abusing a boy, or is it all the same when it comes to long-term effects?
So in terms of the effects, I see it as exactly the same. The boys and girls have the exact same reaction to trauma. However, there is societal pressure that influences the reaction. So if a young girl or young boy is abused by an adult male, oftentimes we see it as negative. Sometimes when a female is abusing a young boy, we don't always see that as a negative. If you see all these teachers, you see some of these middle school teachers, these high school teachers sleeping with 15, 16-year-old boys, and first thing you hear from a lot of people is, oh, that kid, that's great for that kid. But what I've seen is often just as much as young girls are abused by older men, young boys are abused by older women. However, there is a huge amount of silence and shame that young boys don't want to come out and say, because there's a pressure from friends, there's a pressure from even adults. Oh, that was awesome, that's great that you got your first sexual experience with an older woman. It does have the exact same trauma effects as if it were reversed.
Now, and again, you can't comment on the R. Kelly situation, but let's just say that it was true that a little boy at age 10 or 11 was sexually abused by his sister, and now he's kind of going after girls in that 12-year-old range and humiliating them and being dominant and being controlling and being sexual with them. Is that an explanation? Is that, can you explain it by saying that, you know, he was perhaps controlled and abused and maybe humiliated by the sister, and now he's turning that around and doing that against people who he's likening to his sister? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's definitely a good theory. There's a defense mechanism, many defense mechanisms you and I have, every human being has them, as a way of protecting themselves. And you'll see this with victims of trauma and even the kids who are bullied. There's something called identification, where you identify with the person who is hurting you or sexually abusing you. It's a way to protect yourself from further victimization. So a person, say I'm a child being bullied at school, I become a bully, the bully sees me as a bully, so we link up. A person who might be sexually abused as an early child might psychologically identify with their perpetrator as a way of protecting his or her ego, and in a sense being the perpetrator, that taking out those actions on younger kids as a way of identifying with the perpetrator. It's a way we protect ourselves from psychological distress.
Before we take a break, let's add to the mix, you know, this is an unusual situation because we have money and fame, and we've seen this with Michael Jackson, and we've seen this with other people who are around a lot of money that came really fast and fame that came very fast. And R. Kelly, in his situation, he was a person who was maybe shy and withdrawn. He had trouble reading. Music was his outlet. He was obviously very talented right from the beginning. And so he got all of this attention, the good, positive attention right away. How does that add to the mix? How is a person who maybe had these horrible things happen to them in their family life, then have all these wonderful things happen? How does that mix play out in terms of later conduct?
Yeah. So what's important to know is we're all human beings. We breathe the same air. We eat the same food. We use the same toilets. A person who all of a sudden has the world has become on a pedestal, the world puts them on the pedestal, it's possible that they might feel that they can do no wrong, or their behavior can be justified, and or they're protected by so many people, lawyers, family members,
right,
their entourage.
Yes, man.
So yes, man. So essentially, behavior isn't corrected. If you and I do something, the police are going to correct this right away. Our parents are going to correct this. Our friends, our neighbors are going to say, what the hell are you doing? However, when you have so much power that's gained so quickly, it's hard to get that real, unbiased correction where you could do something completely wrong and no one says anything, and you learn this must not be wrong because I haven't had a consequence.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. We have Dr. Jody Adewale, who's a psychologist, talking a little bit about issues that were raised by the R. Kelly documentary, Surviving R. Kelly. Please stay tuned. We're going to go to news in a little bit, and then we're going to talk a little bit more on the other side. You're listening to WGN. About Surviving R. Kelly. We're talking about that documentary that's on Lifetime. It was just a fascinating documentary about a lot of issues. And Dr. Jody Adewale, who was prominently interviewed on that show, is with us from sunny Pasadena, California, married to a lawyer, I might add. I'd love to hear the arguments between the two of you. That would be very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah. They go nowhere. It's all about emotions with me. It's all about logic with her.
Oh, there you go. There you go. There, you're going nowhere. Okay. Let's switch topics a little bit. And we were focusing on the sexual abuser. And let's talk about the victims of sexual abuse, domestic violence, and sort of the brainwashing that was alleged in this documentary. The allegations were that these girls were very young. A lot of them wanted to be stars. They were talented. They could sing. And R. Kelly approached them and said, I can make you a star. And all of a sudden, the girls are separated from their families and are in these humiliating and abusive relationships. So again, you can't comment on that because you don't know the players and you haven't interviewed anyone. But in a situation where you have domestic abuse and you have this separation from families, how are there certain women, are there certain victim types that a perpetrator would seek out in this situation?
Yes, I do believe so. There's something called the foot in the door phenomenon, where small requests lead to larger requests. This is a very simple social psychology theory. And if you ask someone to do something small, they're more likely to give in as the requests get larger and larger. So something like call me daddy might seem like a small request, but a perpetrator might be looking at their individual. Oh, if he or she is willing to do that, that's a sign I can keep moving and I can increase the amounts of requests that I have to lead to, in a sense, sexual or physical abuse. Pedophiles, hebephiles often look at young kids or young teenagers who might be alone or whose family might not be present, or who the perpetrator has something they can exploit the child with, a singing career, money, food, a house, a place to live, maybe an acting career. So oftentimes perpetrators can look for people who they can exploit by either giving them something, promise something, or providing the emotional support that they might not be getting from family or from society.
And it was interesting because I didn't sense, and again, you don't know the whole story, but I didn't sense it in this documentary that these girls came from really bad families. In fact, the family members were present and they were, you know, in large part, you know, involved in some of these things, and then certainly were upset when their daughter was kind of taken away from them. So it's not always kids who are runaways. It's not always kids who have bad relationships, but that probably would help, I would imagine.
Yes, yes. And from the documentary, I saw a lot of these families are present, were loving, were caring.
Yes.
So in a sense, I do see it potentially could have been the promise of a dream, the promise of a career, the promise of I'm going to I'm going to fulfill all your dreams. And that can be just as enticing as emotional support for someone who lacks it.
So the allegations are that there was dominance and, you know, the girls couldn't go to the bathroom without asking. The girls couldn't eat anything without asking. The girls couldn't use their cell phones. The girls couldn't leave their room. And there was humiliation. And I don't need to go into the details of that. And I'm not sure I know all the details. But where does a relationship, where does that domination, that desire to dominate to the point of almost a ridiculous situation, and where does the desire to humiliate come from?
Mm-hmm. So much like sex it can be a drug. Sex can be just as addicting as crack or heroin or alcohol. There's Sex Addicts Anonymous. And we find, just like crack or just like heroin, you need more and more of the drug as time progresses to get the same effect. with sex, sometimes normal, just regular sex doesn't do it for you. So you need to step up the game and do something more wild and more wild and more wild to feel to feed this insatiable craving that one might have. So as maybe just normal, regular sex might still go for a while, and then humiliation might be the itch that scratches the desire. So just like drug sex can be just as addicting, and you need more and more and more risky behavior to feel that drive, to feed that drive of sex or exploitation.
And just for people who are online dating, and I know a lot of people, that's the way you meet people these days, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I know that I've seen situations, you know, doing domestic violence work in the courts myself, that sometimes they meet people online and they don't see the red flags. For people out there who are online dating, are there any red flags for people, and I'll say men, women can be abusive as well, but that might have the tendency to bring someone in and in a relationship and then become dominant and become abusive and physically, sexually, emotionally? What are the warning signs, if you have any?
So it's really hard because people who perpetrate this type of behavior know that victims don't want to be hurt. So they have to, in a sense, be very charismatic and kind and sweet and loving at the beginning. It's almost like attracting a squirrel to you. You can't make any big movements because that squirrel's going to run away. You have to be loving and sweet. Once you're in a relationship, it's important to watch out if an individual wants to isolate you. If he or she wants to put you on an island, a metaphorical island, taking away your phone, limiting your contacts, having complete control over the finances, not letting you watch TV, decreasing your social media access, that's a warning sign. He or she wants to put you on an island, because once that island is established, the abuse is much easier to perpetrate. Someone who might be emotionally unstable, where they get angry really fast or show outbursts of violence, that might be another huge warning sign. Another warning sign is a history of domestic violence. If someone has a history of domestic violence or sexual abuse in their past, it's possible that can be a predictor of future behavior. I know people don't always have a psych profile or the records of an individual, but it might be good to find out more about this person than just from what they say.
And remember, a lot of the records, if you're listening out there, court records, a lot of them are public. And if you don't know how to go about getting them, you might want to hire a private investigator to look into it. And it sounds ridiculous, but if you're involving yourself with someone who you don't know very well, that might be a good predictor. Even reading their divorce paperwork, because a lot of times people allege things that are false in order to get an advantage in divorce. So you can't believe everything you read, but you certainly can get some an idea if that might be an issue. So that's a little word to the wise there. So, you know, Dr. Adewale, I think the final issue that I want to talk about is the issue of, here's a guy who has had these allegations swirling around him, and now it's finally coming to roost. We just had our Springfield, fairgrounds deny R. Kelly a permit to perform there. They're citing security issues. I really think they don't want the unpopularity of the situation. But it's now just coming to roost where people are signing petitions and trying to boycott and trying to get Sony to back off of his contract and the like. But up until now, there have been no ramifications for him, really. How do you explain, and, you know, in the African-American community, if he's doing this to the African-American girls, because there's really no evidence he's really going into to white girls. It's mostly black girls, young black girls, who you know, why hasn't the community been up in arms against him?
So there's many explanations for this. I can give two just offhand. In the African-American community, there's a sense that many men have been attacked by sort of organizations, by police, by other races. And so there might be a tendency to initially want to protect. An instinct to protect is what I call. So Carl Jung, a famous psychiatrist, talked about the collective unconscious, meaning we all share a sort of a way we think. And when men have been attacked, African-American men have been attacked so much in the history, there might be an instinctive response from the African-American community to defend this individual, regardless of the data, just because he the man, or the metaphorical man, has been attacked by all these systems. So another concept could be there's two, our mind is broken down into two parts, the rational side and emotional side. When an individual has appealed to the emotional side of your mind for years and decades, it's hard for the rational part of your mind to have any weight against all that data that's in the emotional side. All these songs, all this music has made you, has given us a perception of who the person is, and when data and facts comes out, it's hard to rationalize when there's so much information in our emotional mind. Now that this information is coming out, it's on television, and the whole country, almost the whole planet is talking about it, people are able to now more rationalize that this behavior is true. If they can do that, it will bring them out of a state of denial.
Interesting, interesting. And I do sense that the tide has turned, and there's going to be some ramifications. And my prediction is that our state's attorney here in Cook County may try to bring some charges if she possibly can. She's already sent out feelers to potential victims. So we're going to be watching this very, very carefully. Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Adewale, you are an author. You're many things. You're an NFL football player. You're a psychologist. You wrote some books, Perceptions of Fatherlessness and Absent Fathers. But the one I'm interested in is Who Can Curly Trust? Can you tell our listeners very briefly what that book is and where they can buy it?
Yes, you can get it on Amazon. It's a kid's book for basic parents or therapists, teaching kids what therapy is and what confidentiality is, how important it is to seek someone you can support, who you can trust to talk about your pain or sort of secrets and things that have been hurting you throughout your life or through your childhood. It's a very interesting children's book.
And whether that's bullying or sexual abuse or abuse of any kind, mm-hmm. and encouraging children to open up, because that's the start of the cure then.
Yes, exactly.
Dr. Jody Adewale, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great evening and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Ken. Keep up the great work.
Okay. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.